On this podcast, you'll find interviews with high-performing, successful individuals in life sciences. On a weekly basis, we cover their proven methods, principles, strategies, and mindsets to implement new technologies that scale to meet the needs of people in our world.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Life Science Success Podcast. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Don and I'm a consultant in life sciences. I also have a digital media marketing company and they have sponsored this episode of Life Science Success.
This episode of Life Science Success is brought to you by D3 Digital Media Marketing. Dive into the digital world with confidence and creativity on your side. D3 Digital Media Marketing is your all-in-one solution for making a lasting impact online. From the vibrant, engaging world of social media marketing, podcasts, and webinars, to the strategic depths of website development, SEO, pay-per-click, email, and content marketing, we tailor our approach to fit your unique brand story. Let's elevate your presence, connect with your audience, and drive success together. Your digital journey starts here. Visit d3digitalmedia.com to learn more.
And with that, let me bring up my guest for today. My guest today is Mark Cody. Mark is an entrepreneur, certified coach, and a beacon of leadership in the life sciences. And so with that, Mark, I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. And I've been looking forward to having you on because I feel like this area of leadership coaching is something that a lot of people in life sciences need. And I just feel like today will be a great discussion for people looking to advance their career.
Well, Don, it's terrific to be here as well. And you're absolutely right, because there are brilliant, brilliant people in the life sciences community who have come through amazing programs at some of the best universities in the world. But even though they're getting trained scientifically and technically by the best, there's not a lot of leadership or soft skill training that's provided. So that's where I come in, to help them really realize the potential and be the best leader they can be, not just technically, but effectively and as visionaries.
Yeah, I feel like so for a long time now, it was funny because I was in the corporate world. I was at one point assigned a coach who was very underclubbed, let's say, for the place in my career that I was at, and the ability to be able to sort of support, I guess, my career growth and things like that was just completely missing. And then, listening to his story, right? He sort of went to a coaching class, and I was one of his first, coaching quote unquote clients. And all I kept thinking was, this is a really interesting, sort of thing. Even if this doesn't work out, I should still, try and seek something out myself. But I'd love to hear your journey. What led you? I mean, it looks to me like you were at Ernst & Young, is that right? And then you went from there, and at some point, you became a coach. So just curious to hear your journey and how you wound up here. And then, happy to, dive in more in terms of the things that you typically talk to people about.
Yeah, definitely, Don. Yeah, just to give a little bit of background, so why did I even go this route? I attribute a lot of it to my father. He was actually a second-generation business owner, and he grew up in the 1940s and 1950s. And I remember him telling me a story that when he turned 16 years old, my grandfather needed him to work in the family business. And it was a distribution business. So in the 1950s, when you're needing the business, you drop out of high school, you join the family business, you start driving one of the trucks. 25 or 30 years later, I'm now around. I'm in junior high. He's been running the business for a decade or two. And he confides in me that the business has been good, but there's so much more he probably could have done had he been trained, educated, or had a trusted business partner he could have relied on. So he's like, Mark, whatever you do, get a good foundation in business, which is why I went to one of the business schools in the Boston area. And then what better way to learn how businesses run than join one of the big four accounting firms? But I still like those entrepreneurial companies, which is why I was part of our entrepreneurial group at EY and spent 8 years there. And it was an amazing experience. I loved the people I was working with. I had great clients across a variety of industries, including life sciences and venture capital. But after 8 years, I realized that life as a partner in a big firm wasn't going to be right for me. I know a bunch of those guys now who are in their late 50s. They're pounding down the days until they can get out. They are very tired. I didn't want that for myself. I wanted more of a life. And that's when I transitioned to another company that many of you may have heard about, Dunkin' Donuts or Dunkin' Brands. So I could get some of that corporate experience. And that was really great too, because that was a brand that, you know, you would tell people you work for Dunkin' and they would always have a story about, you know, what their latest experience at a store or otherwise. I didn't work in a store, I worked in corporate. But for a number of years, my son thought I worked at the local Dunkin' in the drive-thru because I'd always come home with munchkins. So anyways, it was a great way to start my career. But after those 20 years with EY and Dunkin', I realized I was looking to do something a little higher purpose than just selling coffee and donuts or just being on the outside. And that's when I transitioned over into life sciences. So I'll pause there for a moment, Dan, because then the whole life sciences aspect of my career took on a whole nother dimension, which really allowed me to come to where I am now.
No, I think that's a perfect transition as well, because I feel like many of us have this very curvy sort of path that leads us to wherever we are. There's a variety of reasons why we wind up where we do wind up. But so why don't you tell us a little bit more about your life sciences journey?
Sure. So when I was leaving Dunkin', I realized that I wanted to do something that had a higher purpose. I was also interested in maybe doing something entrepreneurial, but I was still in my early 40s. And even though I had a number of years of experience, I was still worried about running my own company and having to, meet payroll for employees every week or every couple of weeks. That's pretty scary because you have a lot of people relying on you. But there was a recruiter that learned about my interest in doing a startup, as well as something that had a little higher purpose. And he introduced me to an opportunity. There was a large CRO that was a pharmaceutical services business, and they were setting up a global consulting practice. And they had already hired some former big pharma drug developers, and they were now looking to build this new consulting division as part of this CRO or services organization. And they needed the business finance operations guy to partner with the MDs and the PhDs that were going to be helping the biotech companies bring their drugs through the development life cycle. So it was a great opportunity to do a startup, but we were private equity backed, corporately backed. So I didn't have to worry about those, week to week cash flow matters, but it was a lot of fun building that business until 2008, 2009. And that's when private equity, instead of investing more, because we were acquiring a lot of other consulting groups over those years, then they started cutting back. And the president of that division and I saw the writing on the wall saying, we could be a lot more effective doing what we do if we just run our own consulting practice. So that was my first foray into business ownership with another couple of entrepreneurial partners and about 20 consultants that we had across the country to really help biotechs and small pharma companies who had a lead asset, bring it into IND enabling studies and bring it through to clinical trials. So it was amazing when we started our own company, we could also be a lot more flexible since we were the partners and we could make the decisions. So we would oftentimes come across that man in a molecule or the scientist in an idea who had never developed a drug, raised money for anything, or ran a company. So I was fortunate that I had some really great scientific partners, and combined, we actually co-founded two biotech companies and raised about $25 million of venture capital for one of them to bring a CNS drug through to a phase two clinical trial. Amazing experience. Unfortunately, we missed our p-value, so the FDA was not going to approve it as a pivotal trial. And as a result, or after that, our venture capitalists got cold feet. But it was still an amazing experience and gave me an appreciation for what entrepreneurs have to go through, not only in terms of bootstrapping early on, but ultimately, pitching hundreds of times potentially to get a few people to come to the table to actually invest in your team and your idea. And then all of the trials and tribulations of drug development. So it was an amazing learning experience. During that time as well, since I had never raised money for other companies, I wanted to think more like an investor. And at that time, joined Boston Harbor Angels as an angel investor so that I could have that perspective. So I think that was actually helpful too, in terms of when we were doing our pitches, I could share with my partners what the investors or what my fellow investors in the angel group would be asking and thinking so that we could position our presentation in a way that would satisfy their needs or their questions. So that was great. That was a ton of fun, and got some great, great experience. And I also realized that's where some of these scientific folks are amazing, but they could really benefit from some of the other soft skill development areas. So fast forward a few more years, we're winding down our biotech company, we're winding down our consulting company. And that's when I had to reflect back on my career and say, all right, what do I want to do next? I was in my early 50s, plenty more gas in the tank. We might live to our late 80s or 90s. So what am I going to do for the next 30 or 40 years? I'm not going to go on the golf course every day. That just wasn't of interest to me. So when I reflected back, what I really enjoyed most was when I could mentor or guide or advise my team members, help them reach higher levels of performance and feel really grateful to be able to do that, as well as work in that leadership suite on the strategy, the direction, the culture, the leadership, the values. And that's when somebody introduced me to the concept of business and executive coaching with Focal Point. And it just checked off a lot of boxes for me, Don.
Yeah, and I think that's a great sort of lead in as well. I mean, I've had I don't know how many dinners or lunches with people, and then we wind up on this topic of coaching, right? And in the conversation, you know, I constantly telling them, I'm like, look, every individual that I know that's in sports has multiple coaches, right? They don't just have one, they have multiple coaches.
That's right.
Why would it be a surprise to somebody, you know, I guess in business or in any form of leadership, that we, you know, would benefit from an outside set of eyes that we can confidentially have a deeper conversation with about every last detail of what's actually happening with both, you know, support, you know, in discussions about, you know, supporting, you know, the things that are happening, but also, you know, in some cases, at least my business coach has a lot of firm, you know, sort of guidance as well. Like, look, you know, I think you should, you know, expand here, or I think you should, you know, consider another idea there. And, you know, I feel like that those things are absolutely critical, you know, to have. And I just don't feel like enough people sort of come to that moment where, you know, if you really want to advance your career, you continually keep hearing things year after year, maybe in your annual review or whatever. One great way to get support in between is with this coach where you set up some goals that, you know, to hit both your personal as well as your professional targets.
Yeah, Don, you are so right. What's interesting is I just wrapped up an engagement with a number of executives at a biotech company. And one of those executives was the head of R&D, and I worked with them for about a year and a half. And unfortunately, their Series B wasn't able to get funded, so they just wound down a few weeks ago. But this gentleman, a brilliant man who was the head of R&D, said, Mark, I expected me to get some value from the coaching because he was sponsored by the company because he had a lot of potential. But he's like, I had no idea how much value and how this would change the trajectory of my career. Mm-hmm. So when he was telling me that, I was having goosebumps. I'm like, that's the impact that I want to have on others, right? To really help them realize more than they ever thought potential, or to identify some of those blind spots that they never knew existed so that they can, it doesn't hold them back anymore. And they can be as effective as not only a leader, but as a team member, colleague, and even, you know, partner at home because of what they learn.
Yeah. I've always been amazed at the conversations that I wind up in, typically with my coach. And, one of the things that I like to sort of talk to people about as well is that, this goes back quite a ways in my career. I was actually living in Southern Indiana, and, we happened to live near one of the catching coaches for the New York Yankees. I know you're in Boston, so sorry right. for that, but, but anyway, so I talked to this guy and I was like, you know, who would know that there is a catching coach for the New York Yankees. And the catcher at the time was having some, you know, some struggles in terms of, you know, certain approaches and certain things that he needed to do. And he was coaching like those very nuanced sort of things. Fast forward a few years, my wife and I took up golf a little while back. And with that, one of the things that, you know, I kind of kept replaying in my head was, you know, your golf game can be drastically improved if your short game actually can be improved. And so we, we went directly for coaching on putting because, you know, I could see that, you know, I'm not going to save strokes when, on my drive. I'm going to, you know, still hit it into the woods here and there and hit it straight into the water or miss the ball again. So, so with that, we went for coaching there and I feel like, you know, that helped as well. And all of these things sort of, you know, again, tie back to that analogy for me anyway, of having, you know, then why wouldn't you consider, you know, having a leadership coach or having, somebody that talks to you about, you know, more broadly your business, to your earlier point, you know, whenever you talked about your dad, you know, a business coach very, very well could have shared just the right elements to stretch here or push the limits there.
Yeah. It's interesting that analogy because, I mean, my dad's no longer here, unfortunately, but you know what? I'm at that point in my career. He couldn't wait 30 or 40 years, but I'm at that point where, you know what? If he was here, I could be that trusted business partner, that advisor that he was looking for. So he must have planted that seed 50 or so years ago. And it took a while to sprout, but it's here. And I absolutely love what I do. So whether it be working with some of these folks on their business or working on them and or their team. Interestingly, I was back up in Boston last week. I work the winters from Florida these days and the summers from the Boston and New England area. But I happened to go back to Boston last week for Nor'easter, but more importantly, for a client meeting. And this was an early stage biotech company. I had known the CEO for a number of years and had done a little work with her. But now that her company's grown, she had 11 people. She had kind of closed some additional financing. She's like, Mark, I want you to come in and work with my group to help them understand their behavioral style. So sometimes what's referred to as a DISC style, DISC behavioral style, because I want my team to be able to work together more effectively, to understand where they have similarities, but also where they might complement each other, which is where conflict can sometimes arise, but where there's also power because they have complementary skills. And what was interesting as we were going through that, everybody absolutely loved learning more about themselves and their colleagues. But when we mapped out their styles and some of their strengths and opportunity areas, we found that a lot of these scientists were highly analytical, were very persistent, very detail-oriented, but they did not have any sense of urgency and or necessarily a high degree of, you know what, flexibility. And what was interesting is the CEO said, no wonder we're missing all of our deadlines. It just was an amazing revelation. So now they know how to more effectively work together because hitting deadlines, as you know, or key financeable milestones, it's absolutely critical. So if you can uncover some of the blind spots or opportunity areas, you can allow or empower your entire team to be much more effective.
Yeah, it's so important to use some of these tools to again, like you said, more broadly understand the organization and how it's functioning as a system or not functioning in the case of missing a lot of deadlines. So
exactly right.
So yeah. In terms of your career and your experience, do you find that you sort of, you know, fall back to some of the things that you experienced previously to help a lot of these organizations, or do you feel like, you know, a lot of things are, you know, things that are directly related to stuff that you coach people with?
Yeah, I sometimes tell folks, Don, that in the 6 years before I decided to become a coach, I helped start a consulting company, two biotech companies. We raised some venture capital, you know, hired a team. It was amazing. It was a ton of fun and it was fast paced. But in the several years after I joined Focal Point and got trained as a coach and identified, you know what, all these new programs and opportunity areas and concepts, I wish I had known that. And I hear this all the time. I wish I had known now 20 years ago, or I wish I had been informed of this 20 years ago, because I could have been so much more effective. I mean, I did okay, but I'm like, oh, I wish I could have known. And I hear that from my clients all the time. I'm like, how come I don't know this? And what's amazing is some of the clients, some of the CEOs or other leaders I work with, they are, you know, fellows with major, you know what, universities, highly, you know what, decorated. And they're like, how come I don't know this stuff? And it's not the technical stuff. It's those soft skills. It's those other skills. Because Google actually did a study a few years back to identify the top attributes for their most successful employees. And out of these 8 top attributes, number 8 was STEM, skills, like the technical skills. The top seven were softer skills. Being a good coach, being a good listener, having empathy, having a good sense of others, being a good communicator. That's what I do. I help people with those seven important areas. The technical stuff, you know what? There's a lot of other folks who can do that. I help them with these other things because in order to be a leader, you need to have a high enough IQ. Otherwise, you're not necessarily going to make it to that leadership level. But once you're there, 90% of your success is due to your EQ, your emotional intelligence. How do we make sure that they're not sabotaging themselves? Because I find that a lot of times, they in many cases may be holding themselves back or have imposter syndrome or not necessarily the right mindset. So I may work with them on that as well. And we can talk more about that in a few minutes maybe.
No, yeah, I think that's a perfect lead into my next question, which is that your bio mentions, you know, just a strong belief in using proven coaching programs and personal development tools. Can you give us just an example of, you know, some of the tools that you normally use for helping a client achieve their professional success?
Sure. So one of the things I'll almost always start off an engagement with a new client is having them take what's called a Trimetrics EQ. It's a behavioral style assessment that helps them understand their behavioral style, their DISC, which I referred to a few moments ago. And DISC is the acronym for four behavioral styles. The dominant D, oftentimes referred to as that type A personality, the yellow I influencer style, and that is, you want the people. They are the ones that you can't ride up an elevator without them breaking into conversation or maybe even getting off on your own floor, even though they're not ready to get off yet. So that's the higher I. The S is the steadiness of the compliance one. They're the ones who bring just, you know, sanity to the equation, very, very level set. And then the C style is the compliant or the analytical one. They're the ones who want to know the why behind all the what's and, you know, make sure there's perfection there. So that's that DISC style. I have clients go through that assessment so they can, one, identify their own style. Second, understand their own style, the strengths, the opportunity areas, and then appreciate their own style. It's not about changing who they are, but helping them understand it and appreciate it. And once they're able to do that, Don, they're able to better identify, understand, and appreciate the styles of those around them, whether it be colleagues, business partners, investors, if you're looking to raise money, or even in the family front. A lot of times my clients will say, Mark, I use this with my husband or my wife, and now I understand them a lot better and why I was maybe frustrating them before and how to more effectively engage with them. So what's interesting is one of the gentlemen last week that was part of this workshop, he is a higher I, which means he's a really engaging individual, loves telling stories, isn't necessarily so concerned about time. It's about the engagement and journey with others. But that's not his wife's style. She is like, give me the bullets, be brief, be gone. So he's like, Mark, when I called her this morning, I had three things. I said, okay, we got to go through this, this, and this. She's like, perfect, bye. He's like, she was happy. So he's like, I was always frustrating her for the last 35 years. Now I know how to better engage at home. So I take folks through that so they can understand their behavioral style and how to better engage with others. Also to understand their motivators, their primary drivers. Why do they get up in the morning? Why do they do what they do? So for instance, some folks who are very intellectually driven, doesn't necessarily mean that they have a high IQ, but they love to learn and grow and investigate. If that motivator is present, but it's not necessarily met in the workplace, they're going to be disengaged. They want opportunities to continue to learn and grow. Or in other cases with salespeople, they want to be, or they need to be resourceful. They need to be getting an ROI for any time that they invest their time, their money, their energy, or otherwise. So this assessment helps us understand what motivates you. So let's make sure that your job and what you're doing lines up with your motivations. And then the third part of this Trimetrics EQ is the EQ component. What's their score across the five different dimensions of emotional intelligence around ourself and or others so that we can be more effective? Because the nice thing about EQ, Don, is unlike IQ, which is pretty much fixed, there's not much we can do about it, EQ with awareness and action, we can improve our EQ. It allows us to be much more effective. So that is just one of the tools that I actually, you know what, start off with my clients. And they're just amazed at how much value and how spooky the assessment is in terms of how it really figures them out.
Yeah, the ability to have a high EQ. I remember, you know, years ago sort of having this discussion, and any time that, you know, somebody wanted to deliver essentially an annual review that wasn't all that positive, it always started with this EQ side of the approach with no explanation as to, you know, what exactly is missing from the things that, that somebody was lacking in terms of performance. And I feel like as the evolution has gone on with EQ, I feel like a better definition is sort of formed in terms of, you know, what exactly is it? How do you understand it? But also how do you know personally how to react or how to, you know, what to do about it, I guess.
Right. So the nice thing is these days, at least with this assessment that we use, you get a score on 1 to 100 to identify what your EQ score is across the five different dimensions. And I'll just share at a high level. The first dimension is self-awareness. How self-aware are we about, you know, what we do or how are we feeling? You may be self-aware, but the second one is self-regulation. How do you make sure that you're regulating yourself so that you're not sabotaging in some way? Third area is motivation. So how motivated, what motivates us? Because motivation is essential for any type of change, because if there's no motivation, it's going to be really hard to change. So those three areas of EQ are how we look at ourselves. The other two areas is with regards to others, and that's around social awareness, sometimes referred to as empathy. How aware are we, if you know what, of others' feelings or sentiments or perspectives? And then if we're aware or empathetic, how do we socially regulate? Are we socially regulating in a good way? Or you may have been in situations where somebody shares a comment, like, why would they ever do that? Because it was just like bringing the self-esteem of the other person down, probably a low level of social regulation in that case. So once we understand our score, we can see where you are with regards to a North American mean on EQ to see whether you're near the mean or a standard deviation either side and where there might be opportunities. And this report or assessment that I use also typically gives you 8 to 12 suggestions on what you may be able to do or practice to improve your EQ in that particular area. And that's what I'll identify with my clients as well. You know what, if they're weak in an area, what they might be able to do. The other thing, which is really interesting, one of my clients on empathy or social awareness, he was mid-90s, really, really strong. Like, oh, that's great that he's so empathetic. He really has a sense of what's going on with others. The highest score is not necessarily the best score, because in this particular case, he had such a high level of empathy that sometimes he was reluctant to share constructive feedback with his team because he was concerned of how it might make them feel. So he was actually doing them a disservice. So I worked with him in that case to say, okay, good to be empathetic, but when do you actually need to make sure that you're sharing the constructive feedback so that it actually benefits your team? Because if you wait till the end of the year in a performance review, they're like, why didn't you tell me this 6 or 8 months ago? Why did you wait? Well, I didn't want to hurt your feelings. Well, you didn't do me any favors, right? So that's where, and he had no idea. He knew he was empathetic, but he had no idea how it was necessarily holding him back and hindering his performance. And in fact, he was a C-suite executive, and the board recognized that and realized that he might not be ready for that next level of leadership till he was able to make the hard decisions that a leader often has to make that aren't necessarily always popular or friendly.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, as a leader, to get the best out of people, I feel like having some level of awareness of these things is absolutely critical, because otherwise, you know, you just continually struggle with the same exact things. I mean, you were talking about, you know, relationships earlier, right? Somebody's, you know, spouse, not reacting in the way that they wanted them to. That's one way, but certainly, you know, you think about your team on a daily basis and wanting the best out of them every single day and, not being able to achieve it just because of maybe a miss in not communicating struggles, but also not sort of rewarding good behavior either. You know, is another gap that frequently leaders, you know, oftentimes struggle with, I know.
Yeah. So I'll share a concept here for you and for, you know, the folks that are watching or listening today too. And it's with regards to, you know, providing feedback. If there's positive feedback, there's a few basic tenets that you want to make sure. You want to make sure it's specific, it's timely, and it's authentic, first of all. But the way in which you deliver it, I use the acronym BIB, B-I-B. You want to talk about what is the behavior very specifically that they did. What was the impact of what they did? And then what was the benefit? So let's even just say with a scientist on the bench, maybe they work some extra time on Friday or before the weekend to, you know what, finish a report that they can send to the CEO. So the behavior is, you know what, thank you very much for spending the extra time to make sure that that report was really well done. It gave me a chance to look at it over the weekend and send it to the board. So the benefit is on Monday when we have our board meeting, we're going to have a much more thorough discussion about, you know, what's going on in the organization. Literally takes about 20 seconds. But what do you think that's going to do to that scientist who did that report? It really, you know what, reinforces the behavior, and they're going to want to repeat that because they're getting rewarded or favorably receiving feedback for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, such a good tip as well to provide to everybody. In terms of your career and kind of your progression, you know, throughout time, what's the greatest piece of leadership advice that you've ever received?
Yeah, what's interesting is, so my father really encouraged me to get that corporate experience, which I think was great. However, oftentimes there's a certain level of safety that's associated with larger corporate organizations. It might be a false sense of safety, because if there's a shift in strategy, people can be history the next day. Yeah. But there's, you know, a sense of safety where you're getting a paycheck. And that sometimes can be comforting. But really, the difference goes to the risk takers. But taking risk requires a certain degree of courage. And you need to kind of get that from inside, right? Because there are no guarantees of success. So someone said, Mark, you know what? Don't be afraid. You know, have faith and confidence in yourself. Have the courage to move forward, because you've done well in a lot of other things. But have the courage to move forward here, because you may realize more success than you ever thought possible, as opposed to staying in the comfort zone. And I find that with my clients a lot of time as well. So one of my clients, he's been a chief operating officer of a number of different biotech companies, private, venture-backed, public, but he's been the COO, the number two in charge. He clearly has the ability to be the CEO of that company, but he's got that pit in his stomach. Like, oh, I don't know. So I'm working with him to nudge him out of his comfort zone. Now, getting out of our comfort zone brings us what's called the fear zone. It's uncomfortable. But once you get past that fear zone, you start to get into the learning zone, and then you get into the growth zone, and that's really fun. But it sometimes takes somebody to nudge you, to give you a little bit more confidence, to quiet those imposters or that judge in your brain that might be sabotaging you. So I think part of it is, you know, have the courage, have the vision, you know what, the grit and determination, because you can do anything you put your mind to. At least that's what we say at Focal Point. However, you can't do everything you put your mind to. So you got to figure out what you want and go after that really strongly.
Yeah, it's such important advice overall. Thank you for sharing that, because I feel like it's an important story for a lot of people to hear, that maybe are considering, like, you know, lateral career moves or steps back, you know, backwards. And, you know, as they consider those things, I feel like it's that inner voice that says, you know, hey, look, you know, you should consider doing this, you know, just because it's safer. However, right, taking that risk and stepping up, you know, comes with a lot of advantages as well, as you said.
Yeah. The other thing, if I could add one other thing as well in terms of advice, actually, there's probably two things from some people that I really, really respect. One was the CFO of a smaller client that I was servicing 30 or 40 years ago when I was back at EY. And he's like, Mark, I know you enjoy the entrepreneur-related work, but early in your career, get experience at the big companies. Because if you don't like it, you can always go small later. But if you go small too soon, you're not going to be able to go big later. So I really appreciated that advice, which is why, you know what, I stayed with EY for a number of years, went to Dunkin', which was obviously a very large organization, and then went to some of the smaller ones after that. So that was really good advice for me. And the second one was, you know, an attorney that I have a high degree of respect for. And he's like, Mark, your network is one of the most important aspects for your career success. Make sure you're nurturing your network. Because what I find is, you know, I'm a former finance person. A lot of times finance folks, they're just head down. You know what? I got my work to do. I'm going to do this here. Or scientific folks, you know what? I'm doing my research. I'm doing my studies. The head down. Suddenly they might find themselves in transition and they don't have a network. Suddenly they're starting from scratch. Or if they get asked certain questions, like who do you know who does this or that? If they don't have a strong network, they don't know. You can add so much value to not only your career, but to your companies and those around you if you have a strong network. So I actually even have my clients in many cases go through and do a networking competency assessment to identify their competency across 8 different networking areas to make sure that they are thinking about this more strategically, identifying the value that they bring, and thinking about, you know, what do they want their network to provide over time, and how do they maybe give back as well? Because it's not about networking to just take, it's about how do we give back? So it's about teaching and giving as opposed to just like taking.
Right. Yeah. I love being, I love using my network as a connector as well. Cause I feel like, you know, it's great to have connections and then just sort of, you know, continue to reach out and connect people. I feel like that there's a lot of power in being that amplifier for people. And then, you know, it reaps its own rewards over time as well.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a book by Adam Grant. I don't know if you've come across it. Give and Take.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a great book. If your readers or for the listeners here haven't necessarily read that or listened to it before. It's about, you know, the 3 styles of individuals, those who are the takers, those who are the givers, those who are reciprocal, and which are the most successful out of that bunch. And we won't give it away here. You're going to have to either listen or read that book.
Right. Yeah. It's a great listen. I've listened to it on Audible, and then I've also taken a peek at the written book as well, because there are certain references that I wanted to go back and highlight as well. And it's a lot easier to manage those in the physical book as well.
Exactly.
So Mark, what inspires you?
Yeah, you know what? There's nothing better than when I'm having a conversation with a client or somebody that I've worked with for a little while, and they just thank me, realizing that, you know, they've either been able to get promoted, or they've advanced otherwise in their career, or raised their money, or they're just a better person because of the work that we have done together. So I get goosebumps. And unfortunately, a number of my clients have written really nice things. I sometimes will share that with my wife, and they're like, that's you? They wrote that about you? Because our spouses or families are oftentimes our biggest critics. But yeah, that just brings so much joy for me. And so I think back to my life. When we're in college or before, typically we get a job because we need money, right? But once we graduate and we get our degree, then we start our career. I'm at this point where I've already had a career of 30, 35 years, whatever it is. I'm at that point in my life where I'm living my calling. I think, you know, I was meant to do this, to work with others. I remember even in high school, my friends would just kid me about, you know, being ambassador or being like the coach or the mentor to a lot of other folks. I thought they would just give me a hard time, and they probably were. But I'm like, you know what? There may have been some truth to that, because here, 35 or 40 years later, it's not about me. It's about what can I do to help others realize their potential. So that's what really inspires me these days, Don.
Well, thank you for sharing that. What concerns you?
Yeah, what's really interesting is last year I took a program. I referred to it a little before in terms of we all have this judge that sits on our shoulder or is in our brain that is constantly criticizing us, beating us up, for things that we did or didn't do, right? So I see you smile a little bit, shaking your head. So we all have that judge. Now, the strength of that judge may vary. And that judge has what's called these accomplice saboteurs, these other voices that go along with it. And some of those saboteurs might be the hyperachiever. And a lot of my clients are hyperachievers, where if they're not number one or the top or doing the best, they're highly critical on themselves. Why can't I do this? And what's interesting is one of my clients, he was originally from India. He scored number one on the top university in India's placement exam for their engineering school. And so when he shared that with his father said, I wouldn't expect anything different. Do you know what that's? Do you know what this executive's top saboteur is? Hyperachiever. If he is not the absolute best, he's beating himself up over it. So to your question, what concerns me? I took this program last year on what's called positive intelligence. Because our mind can be our best friend, but it can also be our worst enemy, and it can hold us back. So what the positive intelligence program taught me, and in fact, now I'm a PQ coach and work with my clients and others on this as well, is that regardless of what happens, whether it's good or bad in quotes, because we might think it's bad at the time, with perspective and by applying what's called our sage powers, we can turn almost anything that happens into a gift. We may not necessarily see it right away, but and then when I reflect back to some challenges that I had in my career or life, and I look at it now, I'm like, you know what? That ended up being a gift. I didn't see it at the time, but it is. So I have a lot more confidence these days. Not that I want anything bad to happen, but I'm like, whatever happens, I know I'm going to be okay. And I know I'll be able to turn it into a gift in some way. So not to say I don't have any concerns, but I am less concerned about those things because I know I can find the gift in it.
That is a very important, I feel like, monumental, you know, kind of reflection as well that, you know, hey, look, you know, for many of us, you know, even in our hardest times, you know, as you sort of look back, you know, once you're through that period of life, then all of a sudden, you know, you typically either learn something or you got some bigger benefit out of it. And so that going through that journey is just as important, and going through the hard times are just as important as living through the good times as well.
Yeah, we've often heard that, you know what, failure is the best teacher, right? So it's not about failing and dragging yourself down, but failing and learning and then doing it again. So I think Edison, he tried over 5,000 times to get the light bulb to work. So I think there was a reporter that said, Mr. Edison, why you failed 5,000 times? Like, no, I've learned 5,000 ways that it doesn't work. And then shortly thereafter, it worked. And fortunately, we're in the light these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question. What excites you?
You know what? It's just the opportunity. As a coach now, I get the chance, you know, every day to, you know, work with people, to help people, you know, realize more of their potential than they maybe otherwise thought was possible. So that really excites me. I don't see myself doing anything different between now and the, you know, when I stop working, whenever that might be. I do play golf as well. I have to go to a golf coach because I need that help. I don't want to do that 6 or 7 days a week. It would be way too frustrating. But I really enjoy when I can engage with folks and they can realize more success. They share their ideas with their team or otherwise. And you know what? Express some gratitude to me. That's all that really matters to me at this point.
Well, Mark, Cody, thank you so much for coming on the Life Science Success Podcast and for sharing your story as well as, you know, all the things. And I feel like, you know, if anything, people should have gotten a lot of tips out of this episode as well. If they wanted to connect with you, what's the best way to connect with you?
So they can just email me at MCOTE. You can see it in the bottom here at focalpointcoaching.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn at Mark Cody.
All right. Thank you so much for being on. I appreciate you being here.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Great job, Don. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to Life Science Success. For complete details about this podcast, including show notes, how to get in touch with guests, and more episodes, please visit www.lifesciencesuccess.com. If there's someone you'd like for us to invite to the show as a guest, please let me know by sending me a message at the podcast website. Please click subscribe on your favorite podcast app, share the podcast, or tell a friend about it, and last but not least, rate the podcast. Thank you again.